Hello and welcome to the April edition of the Waterlogged Podcast. My name is Dan Genolfi.
And I'm Howard Marlowe.
Thanks very much to the American Shoreline Podcast Network and Coastal News Today for hosting us. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about the ongoing marine mortality events that have been occurring along the beaches in New Jersey and the possible connection to offshore wind surveys. And then we'll talk about a few federal updates, including coastal legislation, House appropriations, and other federal important federal news involving post-disaster repairs. Let's get started. All right, so I feel that I need to lay this offshore wind and whales problem to rest. And I think we should start by looking at the empirical evidence. Since December 30th, over 30 whales and nearly two dozen dolphins have washed ashore in New Jersey and New York. There are very, very noisy surveys taking place in the exact same area and at the exact same time as marine mammal strandings are occurring. NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which also oversees the National Marine Fisheries Service, has issued permits, a dozen permits, to developers to harass tens of thousands of marine mammals in this exact area. And I think it is therefore reasonable, especially in the absence of government investigations, to hypothesize a possible connection between these activities and marine mortality. If sonar and other acoustic surveys are harmless, then why are developers requesting incidental take authorizations to harm marine mammals? Federal scientists point the blame at vessel strikes and fishing entanglements, yet vessel traffic is down more than 25% this year, and not a single stranded mammal showed any signs of fishing entanglements. Now, when this first started, it was only whales that were washing up, which are large and relatively slow mammals. And vessel strikes are therefore a plausible cause. But why then, if shipping is down? Especially since it's down significantly, it's 25% into the port, down 25% into the Port of New York. But then dolphins began washing up in numbers, with eight dolphins washing up simultaneously last week in CIL, New Jersey. Yesterday, another dolphin washed up in Cape May. I mean, this is a daily or weekly occurrence now. And dolphins are extremely nimble creatures that commonly frolic in boat wakes and things like that.
So, Dan, I heard that there was another podcast on this network which basically said that this kind of information that you're raising is some kind of hysteria. What are the facts?
Well, the federal government and state governments have provided zero evidence actually dismissing any connection. I mean, there is data provided in the harassment permits that are provided to developers. They're issued by NOAA, and they show that the equipment used for these surveys produces sound that's above the level known to harass marine mammals and disrupt feeding, breeding, migration, and a whole host of other impacts. I mean, these pieces of equipment are known as sparkers, boomers, chirpers, and other types of, you know, multi-beam echo sounders, which are really all sonar-based types of equipment. And here's the thing. We're just asking for a temporary pause to investigate this. No one is saying fully stop this. But, you know, those who are actually concerned about the environment, those who live near the beach, those are the ones being called conspiracy theorists. Is it not reasonable, in light of over 45 marine mammal strandings, to simply take a pause and conduct a thorough investigation? I mean, that's really all that's being asked for. There's something going on here. The federal government and state government say we don't really know why, but we're sure that it's not offshore wind, even though we may be using equipment that is known to harass marine mammals and all these sorts of things. Is that not?
Let me ask: is there anywhere in the world where we even have a perhaps comparable? I know our coast, every coast geological conditions are different, but. You know, there's been offshore wind in parts of Europe. How is it different from what's being proposed, let's say, off the coast of New Jersey, where really the major development is being proposed to be developed?
Well, you're talking about marine mammal strandings?
Yeah.
Well, they've been going on in Europe, too.
Oh.
So, I mean, they've been going on for quite some time.
And they're...
And you look at how far back offshore wind goes, and they've been happening at least that long. If you look in, particularly in the north, in the New York Bight, there was someone I saw a chart that laid out all of the marine mammal strandings and then correlated that with the increase in surveys off the coast of New Jersey and New York. It's a very clear trend.
And these, the offshore farms proposed for off New Jersey, these are bigger turbines.
Much bigger, double the size.
And the number are greater, aren't they?
Well, there's a lot of, I don't know exactly how many turbines are in Europe, okay. But I mean, there's a lot of issues associated, particularly environment. I think this kind of all falls into general what I call climate hysteria, because I think we all can agree the U.S. needs to reduce its reliance on fossil fuels.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that if climate hysteria can really drive bad policies, right? I mean, just yesterday, E&E News released an article that highlighted the fact that a huge number of scientists disagree with Biden's doomsday warning about the climate warming beyond 1.5 degrees Celsius. And I heard a really good way to put this is, you know, if we miss that exit on the highway, it's not that the world is going to end. We simply get off at the next exit and try and redirect ourselves back towards whatever path that we need to be on to reduce emissions. But again, climate hysteria is driving bad policies. Offshore wind is not the solution to climate change. In fact, offshore wind will have nearly zero impact on U.S. climate goals. It will disrupt the economies of coastal communities, have long-lasting, irreversible consequences for the marine environment, and force higher costs of electricity onto ordinary Americans. And this is, again, this is not going to have really any meaningful impact on electricity production or greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, to talk about the cost of offshore wind, here's a quote from the Virginia State Corporation Commission, which is the regulator in Virginia, regarding the Coastal Virginia Offshore Wind Project. The magnitude of this project is so great that it will likely be the costliest project being undertaken by any regulated utility in the United States. The electricity produced by this project will be among the most expensive sources of power in the entire United States. So the costs of offshore wind are enormous, and it's not just in monetary terms. The environment will actually probably play the biggest toll. And, you know, one common phrase that people, I think, toss around a little bit lightly nowadays is follow the science, right? Okay, well, let's follow the science. In May 2022, the lead agency for the U.S. Offshore Wind Program, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, received a letter from NOAA's Chief of Protected Species, Dr. Sean Hayes, which cited a myriad of concerns related to various impacts of offshore wind development. Dr. Hayes cited 29 references that demonstrate how additional noise, vessel traffic, and habitat modifications from the development of offshore wind will, quote, likely cause added stress that could result in additional population consequences for marine mammals. Well, okay, so certainly Sean Hayes followed the science. Guardline, a marine surveyor on behalf of offshore wind developer U.S. Wind, concluded in a 2015 report that noise from seafloor surveys may be detectable over distances of several hundred meters and could impact marine mammals in a number of ways, from direct injury and behavioral responses to perceptual and indirect effects. A 2013 study cited also by Guardline indicated that multi-beam echo sounder system was the primary cause of a mass whale stranding event. Certainly, Guardline followed the science. In 2016, after researchers investigated several mass stranding events in the Pacific, the United States Navy concluded that its use of sonar killed whales. Certainly, the Navy followed the science. 20 years earlier, a NATO panel determined that sonar testing off the coast of Greece resulted in whale strandings from sound levels far quieter than previously believed. Certainly, NATO panel followed the science. So, I mean, there are plenty of examples of this. Of how sound can severely impact marine mammals. I mean, as I said before, it started with whales, which have a different hearing range than dolphins. Now that dolphins are washing up, I mean, there's got to be something going on out there. And I can certainly point the blame at offshore wind, but no one really knows for sure. And that's why it's reasonable to take a pause and investigate this. Because if the sonar and acoustic surveys are harmless, why are developers requesting incidental take authorizations to harm marine mammals?
What struck me is that both the government agencies and the private NGOs that are very much involved with environment and marine mammals and the like, they're all saying no problem. And I've never seen that happen. Every time we kill a turtle for a beach project,
which rarely happens.
It rarely happens. But we have kill limits. And if we go one over those, the project stops. People say, you know, we know directly there that something, you know, is wrong. What I'm saying here is that here, nobody knows for sure what is going on. And I think that's the concern that I have, that if we are trying to look at what we ought to be doing to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, then what is the best answer to that? And right away, people rushed into offshore wind. It might not be our best answer. It might be that we're going to have to look at things that in the 70s we thought were awful, but which have been shown to work well now for not just the environment, but for actually producing reliable electricity at reasonable rates. And that's nuclear power. And they do small nuclear power plants now in a variety of nuclear technologies. It's a lot different than the 70s, and nobody's looked at it, really.
Yeah, and everything that I've mentioned on this podcast, particularly the incidental take authorizations provided by NOAA, are all matter of public record. I encourage all of our listeners, go look at the numbers yourself, because they are alarming. There are... I'm not exaggerating when I say thousands of marine mammals that they are getting. It is level B harassment, which really amounts to harassment. Level A means you can actually, you know, directly harm and injure marine mammals. But, you know, level B is enough, you know. So, you know, to all of our listeners, go, don't listen to me. Go research these things yourself. I mean, I've spent a lot of time looking at this information. So, you know, it's something that's very important to a lot of people who live along the beach. It's extremely concerning, and I think that we really need to get to the bottom of this.
Well, in getting to the bottom of it, let's talk about the president, Congress, and I was going to use the word incidental, things like that. The president sent Congress's budget recommendation last month. It signals the start of what promises to be months of congressional hearings and negotiations and debates. For the Corps of Engineers, he proposes a robust $7.4 billion of spending. It's about $1 billion less than Congress finally appropriated for the current fiscal year. But at the same time, it's $1 billion more than the president proposed a year ago. So last couple of years, Congress has appropriated a little over $8 billion for the Corps, and I would predict that they're going to come up with about $8.2 billion this year as well. The president's proposal and actually final appropriations have all been short on investigations money. That's something we all ought to be concerned about, because the problems of that we're looking about in water resources, which vary from the lack of water in some areas to too much water in other areas, require 21st century studies and 21st century projects. Projects won't all be federal projects, but they do require studies, and that money is being shortchanged. At the same time, they're putting a bunch of money into R&D, which helps support the studies, but the studies aren't there in terms of funding studies. The other problem there is the whole core process set up by Congress, where you can't do a study unless a local mayor or a governor requests one. So I don't want to get into that right now.
What about just coastal?
Just coastal. Well, Congress has done well with coastal, but the president came up with about $38 million. Now, we switched from billions to millions. That's about double what he came up with last year. And last year he came up, last year being the current fiscal year. It doesn't really make sense when you say last year is the current fiscal year, but you get what I mean. I think he came up with the lowest on record of any president since we've been tracking.
I believe so.
Yeah. So,
especially coming from a coastal state like Delaware.
Delaware, yeah, you would think, believe me. So when you look at it there, the president, though, has an advantage. Mentioning Delaware, if you were to look at how Delaware finally came out after all of the earmarks and the authorization, new authorizations, it has come out, I would say, disproportionately well. I'm not wishing ill. I have relatives who live in Delaware near the coast, so I wish them all well. But the fact is that Delaware has come out kind of well. The wrinkle in this year's funding is that the House Republicans are insisting that there be severe cuts in rather discretionary domestic spending. Those cuts will be 20% or more. We have to look at it and taking us back to fiscal year 2022 and 2021 levels. Now, once you take, as they have agreed to take, Social Security and Medicare and veterans benefits off the tables, those are all domestic discretionary spending, there's not much left. The Corps, NOAA, which did well in the president's budget proposals, EPA doing well, a lot of the agencies concerned with environmental functions and missions doing well in the president's budget, but they would get slashed, as well as public welfare, housing, health issues, and the like. So it's going to be difficult discussions in terms of the budget this year, and we're not going to be seeing results of that until sometime late this year. So expect us to be talking about that in future podcasts. Americans are spending $20 billion a year to repair their homes post-disaster. That's nearly twice as much as they were spending 20 years ago, according to a study from Harvard that was released in the last couple of weeks. Now, the Corps has come up with a couple of rules proposals, which kind of slipped under the radar. One eases benefit costs and cost-share requirements for continuing authorities projects in small and disadvantaged communities. This is trying to deal with the problem that the Corps has, that its programs, because they're so heavily reliant on one, a benefit-cost ratio of a positive one-to-one, and how that's determined, which is largely on buildings. The more buildings you have, the higher they are, the denser they are, the ritzier they are, the better your benefit-cost ratio. Obviously, small and disadvantaged communities don't fit that. And also the cost share. Even when you have a cost share of just 35%, which some programs do, but most studies are 50%, it's kind of difficult. So they're trying to deal with at least the continuing authorities programs. And if you want to find out what continuing authorities programs are, I'm going to be pitching here our Waterlog website. There's a lot of information there about core programs and what they are, and it's real simple and really simple to find, easy to understand. So the Corps has also proposed a rule change that would force communities to come up with resilience plans in order just to be eligible for post-disaster resilience. Now think about that. It sounds good if you look at it and says, well, if you're going to get post-disaster resilience, shouldn't you have done something pre-disaster to make yourself more resilient? Sounds good. Except one, the post-disaster resilience program was only set up to be post-disaster. The Corps is proposing a rule change, not a legislative change. I don't know the last time, like, it must have been the 1980s when the Corps proposed a legislative change. I can't think of anything sooner. But the fact is that it is an unfunded federal mandate. That is, if you're going to be making changes to your community, raising buildings, doing anything like that, where's the money coming from? Corps doesn't have any program to do that. So we, in our firm, Warwick Group Consultants, we're the only coastal interest firm, interest association, or whatever you want to call it, that filed a complaint, basically, saying this is a bad idea.
No, and it's a seriously bad idea.
Very.
I mean, you can't... I think we either discussed this on the last podcast, or I've just said it so many times. The Corps has contracts with local governments, right, for these beach projects, and oftentimes state governments, right?
Yeah.
which nowhere say anything about additional actions you need to take outside of the project area, meaning outside the beach, to reduce risk.
Nothing.
Yet here they are saying you need to do that.
Yeah, correct.
And these are, you know, most beach nourishment projects have come with 50-year contracts. So that's a, you know, everything's laid out for 50 years. So, and this would be retroactive.
Retroactive. It doesn't do anything to amend those contracts, incidentally. It imposes something on top of them, which probably somebody will sue over if it gets implemented that way. I hope it doesn't get implemented. And I hope that not only our comments on the coast, but also inland interests, water interests, had concerns. And I commend them for that, because their interests were expressed, Waterways Association and the like, expressing their concerns about that. And I hope it doesn't get implemented. Yeah. So, also to report, a number of bills have been introduced that affect the coast. We really don't have enough time in our podcast today to go through them. And Mr. Rouser and Mr. Graves of Louisiana have introduced a post-disaster bill. Senators Menendez and Senator Kennedy of Louisiana have introduced another bill. Those are ones that I think I would direct people to look at. How do you find out what the bill numbers are? Go to our Waterlogged website. We have a listing of those bills, their numbers, who introduced them, what they're about. We have a lot of good information there. We also post things on LinkedIn, the Waterlogged site on LinkedIn. So a little plugs for those, because you can follow us. Plus, you can also subscribe to our Waterlogged e-newsletter.
We will continue to cover all things wind, whales, and coastal legislation, anything related to the Corps of Engineers. Thanks for listening to Waterlogged, and we'll see you guys next month.
Bye-bye.